here's a story from The World.
It was designed by American engineers more than a century ago. Even in the 21st century, the Panama Canal is still an engineering marvel.
It's all done by gravity. Water will always seek its lowest level possible, opening and closing.
The canal is also still one of the most strategic waterways on Earth, especially for the United States. Get this, 2 of every 3 ships heading to American ports pass through the Panama Canal. Today, we take a deep dive into Panama's evolving relationship with another country, China.
As a Panamanian band plays, we cruise down a canal where China's expanded a port on the Atlantic side, built a cruise ship terminal on the Pacific side, and is building a bridge over the canal itself.
That's veteran China reporter Mary Kay Magstad. She's the creator of the podcast On China's New Silk Road in collaboration with the Global Reporting Center. As Mary Kay explains in this story, Panama, back in 2017, became the first Latin American country to join what's called the Belt and Road, China's global infrastructure project.
Americans didn't just build the Panama Canal. They controlled it for the better part of a century, after the U.S. military helped Panama break off from Colombia and become its own country in 1903. And if you walk near the Pacific entrance to the Panama Canal in Panama City, you may stumble upon a peaceful wooded area with the graffiti-covered ruins of former American villas, shops, government buildings, even an old movie theater.
When the photographer and I came to the to this report, there were like a lot of cars, you know, with people sleeping in them.
This is Luis Barón. He's an investigative reporter with La Prensa newspaper in Panama. In fact, he helped report out the Panama Papers, the leak of millions of encrypted financial and legal records from a Panama-based law firm that led to resignations, prosecutions, and changes to law around the world related to crime and corruption. And he's showing me around this area, the former Panama Canal Zone. It was an unincorporated territory of the United States from 1903 to 1979. It stretched 10 miles wide and the entire length of the Panama Canal. Luis did a story here a while back. It was called A Ruined Eden.
I mean, the Panama Canal Zone was the perfect place to live because, you know, you have all the U.S. regulations, the U.S. food, the U.S. law, you had the U.S. protection because you had, it was like a perfect society, a utopian society, but you were in a tropical environment. You know, it was like a little piece of heaven.
If you were American. And a few notable Americans lived here.
John McCain, he was born on the Panama Canal Zone. And I can't remember his name. I know his last name is Murphy from the Murphy Law. Mm-hmm. You know that everything that could get worse, it will get worse.
You mean it was that Murphy?
Yeah, he was also Zonian.
Zonian, as in living in the Panama Canal Zone under U.S. law and U.S. protection. When the U.S. controlled the canal, Panamanians, by and large, were not allowed to go into the Panama Canal Zone. That created both a mystique and a resentment, and eventually a push for an end to what pro-independence protesters saw as this neo-colonial American presence. And now, a short walk from these abandoned American buildings at the mouth of the Panama Canal is a brand new, sprawling convention center built by a Chinese contractor. China had also been angling to build a new embassy in this area, right at the mouth of the Panama Canal. Those plans changed after the U.S. government and many Panamanians pushed back hard.
Yo opino que venir a invertir a Panamá no está mal.
This is Francisco Quesada. He's a 24-year-old photographer we bumped into as we were checking out the ruins in the old Panama Canal Zone. We got chatting about what he thinks of the growing Chinese presence and investments in Panama.
Okay, he says that foreign investment is always good and always welcome. What we have to do is watch really close what are the real intentions behind that investment. We could not accept investment that could harm our country. For example, the thing that happened with the Chinese embassy that wanted to take out some old Panama Canal Zone land, and we as Panamanians opposed to that. I think every country can bring its investment here in Panama as long as it brings something good for us.
China pitches its New Silk Road investments as something that will do just that. China's leaders say this will be a win-win for all countries that participate, creating a global community of shared destiny. Luis, having just been on a Chinese government-organized trip for Latin American journalists to China, finds China's rhetoric like this to be a bit much.
What they were insisting on is, you know, one of the phrases one of them use is like, we have a good heart, you could trust us. That is what everyone says. But they want to sell this image that they are helping us because they wanted to see flourish, you know? Like, they have no interest. Just, you know, I want to see Panama growing because we have a good heart and we want like a perfect world.
You seem not entirely sold.
Not really, not even a little bit. We're all grown-ups. You can tell the truth. You can speak the truth. You don't have to hide behind that image.
After all, he says, Panama's about business. We get it. China's leaders haven't been laying out more than $500 billion so far in loans and investments around the world just out of the goodness of their hearts. They're building a new network of global trade that puts China at the center, while also being present in ports and other places that are strategically important to China's interests. And with Panama taking a hit from COVID-19, help for Panama's economy would actually be welcome. Except, Luis isn't sure that what China is offering is going to get where it needs to go to improve ordinary people's lives in Panama.
China's aspiration in this region, I think it could benefit these countries. But since we have like corrupt governments in almost all of the Latin American countries, I don't think the China aspiration and investment into this country would benefit us. If bad managed, we could end up like Sri Lanka. That could be a real scenario for us.
That China would take over control of the Panama Canal or something like that?
I don't think the Panama Canal, but they could take control of a port, a chunk of land of Panama. And we are like really experienced giving away land.
All along the New Silk Road, people are paying attention to what happened in Sri Lanka. And here's what happened. China extended sizable loans so a Chinese state-owned company could come in and build a port and an airport that Sri Lanka didn't really need. In fact, they barely got any business. And when Sri Lanka couldn't afford to pay its debt in 2017, the Chinese side pushed for a deal that gave China majority control of the port and of a huge area around it, for 99 years.
I did see that in Sri Lanka. It's very sad.
This is Johnny Wong. He's a Panamanian of Chinese descent, a mechanical engineer with degrees from the University of Texas and Stanford, who worked on the Panama Canal for 3 decades.
I went to a training. It was on ports seminar. And there were a large group from Sri Lanka. And in a way, I don't want to be offensive, but I was a bit sorry for them. But I don't think you cannot blame everything to the Chinese, you know, who signed that. You know, some ambitious leader or wanted a big project. So I think we have to play smart and play by have everything, all the concessions given by open competition with transparency.
Johnny says that's what he did when he was designing and overseeing parts of a Panama Canal expansion project from 2007 to 2016. It added an extra lane and doubled the canal's capacity.
Even from the high in the government, they have recognized the canal is running efficiently, and they even say it's running better now than in the older system.
When the U.S. was controlling it.
It's controlling it. We can react quicker to customer needs. It's more like a running quasi privately, like a private, but try to respond to our clients.
And he says the canal is making more money now and putting more money into government coffers. In fact, Panama's got enough money to fund infrastructure projects that Chinese companies have done or are doing that so far it hasn't had to rely on loans from China, like Sri Lanka did. Johnny says as a Panamanian, he's proud of what Panama's been able to do on its own. But he recognizes Panama still has to balance its relationships with contending superpowers.
And in the end, we are just a little pawn on the chessboard. We're not that big. We cannot change the influence of power. We're just a little piece that gets moved. So.
Yeah. As someone of Chinese heritage, are you looking at what's happening with China's growing presence in the world and thinking, this is kind of great?
In a way, yes. Now, you know, you can feel the pride of it being more modern, people being exposed, like in your case. You say, hey, this is not the China that, you know, they'll sell you in the movies.
But Luis, the journalist, tells me a funny thing happened to China's Panama plans after elections brought in a new Panamanian president, Laurentino Cortizo, in May 2019.
With this new government, that project, like, stopped. I don't know if it was, like, we're not going to do it, or it just, like, stopped till see if they can get offer a better deal. I don't know. But the relations with China have getting cold with this government.
Or it could be this. The U.S. government has been pushing back hard against China's expanding presence in Panama, Mexico, and Latin America in general. Just weeks before Chinese President Xi Jinping visited Panama in late 2018, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo visited Panama and warned against what he called China's predatory economic activity. Since then, Chinese projects started being scaled back, canceled, or rejected. $4 billion high-speed rail? No thanks. Building a $2.5 billion monorail linking Panama City with its western suburbs? Nah, we'll have South Korea's Hyundai do it instead. That new Panama Canal bridge being built by a top Chinese state-owned company? Scaled back. Negotiations with China for a free trade agreement? Stalled. And Panama's government has said it will audit the Hong Kong company Hutchison Ports that has for 20 years operated Panama's ports at either end of the canal, while considering whether to renew its concession when it expires in 2022. Whether any of that changes or reverses as a result of the hit Panama Canal traffic and profits have taken from COVID-19 is not yet clear. What is clear is the Trump administration's desire to push China out of America's backyard. That includes in Mexico, which is not yet one of China's New Silk Road partners, but has been exploring its options.
Mary Kay Magstad reporting there from an episode of the podcast on China's New Silk Road. Another place in Latin America where the Trump administration is pushing back against China's ambitions is Mexico. The Mexican government has not signed on to the Belt and Road Project. Not yet, at least. I'm joined by Isabella Cota in Mexico City. She's the economics correspondent for the Spanish newspaper El País and co-reported with Mary Kay for this episode of the podcast. I'd like to know first more about the Mexican economy right now, Isabella. How has the pandemic impacted it, and what's been the hit on people there?
It's really hard in Mexico to know exactly how many jobs have been lost through this pandemic, because more than half of the economy is informal. But officials, specifically the statistics agency, they estimate that around 6 million people have lost their source of income over the course of the pandemic so far. Living in Mexico City, for example, it's very visible how this pandemic has hit people so hard. You know, you get knocks on the door and people ring on your doorbell every day looking for money or asking for work because they've lost their job as maybe a waiter or, you know, a driver in the last 6 months. So it's been truly devastating for Mexico.
So a big informal economy, an important one in Mexico. Let's look at the formal economy, specifically the auto industry. The auto industry is big in Mexico, and Chinese car companies have been players there for quite some time. How does the government in Mexico City view the presence of China helping out economically? Is there a path through this economic hit from COVID with the help of China?
You know, I'm not so sure about a path itself. I mean, I guess the United States, you know, is so important. We are so highly integrated that for the Mexican government, it's a little bit of a tricky situation to talk about a specific investment strategy or path alongside China or with the help of China. What I would say is, more than anything, the auto industry in Mexico has attracted companies from all over the world, from Japan and Korea. We have one of the biggest Kia plants are in Mexico, for example. So it's not just China. Mexico is really becoming an automotive force for exports as well as manufacturing.
Mexico is part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership trading bloc, and that bloc does not include the U.S. The Trump administration backed away from it. But Mexico has not signed on to China's Belt and Road project. Why not?
Well, this goes back to the idea that Mexico is kind of in the U.S.'s backyard. We know fully well that the U.S. is Mexico's top trading partner, with 80% of exports being sent to the United States. And our second trading partner is China. And it's been the case for the last 13, 14 years. So the risk is that we become dependent on both of these countries.
Beyond the auto industry, Isabella, what sort of Chinese state-run projects are you seeing in Mexico right now?
Huawei's, the Chinese telecommunications company, is building a 5G infrastructure along the border on the Mexico side, along the border with the United States. That's a project that has been creating a lot of buzz in recent years. Another one, which was announced this year, a Chinese state-owned company will be working in the first tranche of the Tren Maya. This will be a government project. That is, it will be a train that will run from the Yucatan Peninsula all the way through the jungle, and it's meant for tourists.
Wow.
It's meant to attract around 8,000 tourists. And the Chinese company got the contract, the government contract, along in a kind of consortium with local companies as well. The biggest investment last year, which was for about $400 million, was by the energy company Sinopec, and it's for its base of operations in the port of Tampico. So we know that these investments are going to be very, very large, and the Chinese participation in these large projects is going to be very important during this administration.
So sizable Chinese investment in Mexico, and yet Mexico is not on the Belt and Road project, but it has not ruled it out, has it? So what circumstances might force Mexico to seal the deal, or do you just not see that happening?
I don't really know if this government is going to be the one that manages to do that, that manages to keep economic and diplomatic relations with the United States going strong as neighbors, as top trading partners, and at the same time signs off to the Belt and Road Initiative. I'm not sure they're going to manage, but I think that they're going to try. And quite frankly, I mean, considering the moment that we're living now with the pandemic, I hope they do, because Mexico needs all the investment and all the economic opportunities that we can get.
Isabella Cota, correspondent with the newspaper El País. She also co-reported the latest episode of the podcast on China's New Silk Road. Isabella, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.